for me, fashion is a verb. So it's to fashion.
You're listening to Wardrobe Crisis with Claire Press. Join me every week as we look at sustainability, ethics, and the business and madness of fashion. Hello, everyone. How are you all doing? By the way, are you getting our newsletters? Wardrobe Crisis News goes out twice a week and is packed with sustainable fashion news and interviews and contributor op-eds. You can sign up on www.thewardrobecrisis.com. And remember, you can find me on Instagram at Mrs. Press. Tell me what you think. And you can also check out our magazine's Instagram account, which is at The Wardrobe Crisis. All right. How did denim get so unsustainable? And did it all start with stonewashing? Now, our guest this week accepts responsibility for the industry going so hard on that. Francois Gibeau was there at the start. When, as he puts it, I was just a stupid guy. You know, he just didn't know the environmental impacts of stonewashing. Now, after that, of course, came acid wash, sandblasting, and all the rest of it. I wrote about this in the book, Wardrobe Crisis, and I actually didn't get to talk to Francois for that. So I'm very glad that I did for this podcast. This is what I love about it. It's just so good to get in front of these legends. And that is what Francois Gibeau is. He was there at the start of the greening of denim. He was speaking out against the practices that stuff up the planet, and he still does. He's very outspoken. And again, at the start of the new technology with lasers. He is a true original. Meet the man who brought denim to Paris in 1964 with his boutique Western House, who dressed Jimi Hendrix, that is true, oh my God, who counted Brigitte Bardot as a customer and who wanted to be a cowboy like John Wayne. In fact, I think he still does. This is a rare chance to get to hang out with one of fashion's great characters. D'accord, on y va. François.
Yes.
Bonsoir, non?
Bonsoir. Bonsoir, depend on time, okay.
Today, I'm not even going to try to do this in French.
Okay, but you're not on the same planet anyway. You were on the south and I'm on the north anyway.
Is bonsoir somewhere?
Yes, somewhere. Yeah, absolutely. You were first.
Well, I'm delighted that I've grabbed this chance to talk to you because you are a legend of denim and someone that I've looked up to for years. I actually wrote a book called Wardrobe Crisis in which I told your story, but through other interviews because I never met you. And now I get the chance.
Yeah, but it's embarrassing because all this story about legend, you know, when you work or like me, when we start to tell a story about the denim somewhere. First, the name, it was, okay, denim is coming from where? The people, some mean people say...
Denim?
No, it's not true.
Is it not? Can you tell that story that's not true for listeners who don't know?
Absolutely not true.
Which is that sailors from Nîmes wore these pants, right?
That is really a bullshit, but it's a great bullshit because it's the same like a gen, like a Genova. Jeans come from gen. It's a story we tell in the 60s, or we tell all this story about... In the reality, jeans is made amoxit in New Hampshire.
In what?
The first denim was made in New Hampshire in America.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
And when was that?
Oh, it was from the time of this story about the gold rush, the miners. Also, that is true. That is true. Yeah. After some kind
and
of
Mr.
Serge.
Strauss.
No, but the construction of the denim somewhere, yes, it's existing everywhere. It could be the denim from Nîmes, from Delft, or different kinds. No, but somewhere nobody showed me, and I continue to say, where is coming this denim? Because the denim in Nîmes is ridiculous. It's a piece of linen. It's nothing to do with that. Blue, yes, surely blue. But okay, but part of the legend. What when you talk about the legend is what is interesting because it's surely not true, but okay.
Well, we love those kind of iconic symbols of denim as cool. So the gold rush, the cowboy.
Yeah, absolutely. That I was manipulated. That after war, okay, because I'm a baby boomer, and for me it was I want to be a cowboy. I want to be a cowboy, and now in my I'm 70 something, 73, 4. I don't remember, but. I'm living here in America. I'm living in I'm not a cowboy, and I'm so disappointed.
Where did you grow up when you were imagining being a cowboy?
Oh, I was in the south of France.
Whereabouts?
In the south, Mazamet. Mazamet is a little village close to Toulouse. Toulouse, the idea Toulouse, you know. Okay.
So you, as a little kid, were like, okay, denim, I get it. I want to be a cowboy.
No, it was from, it's more the dream. It was all this intoxication by American.
American
invasion. American invasion, because we receive everything in the same time. We receive the music, we receive the clothing, we receive chewing gum, we receive after war. It was something like, oh my God, this country was great for us. That it was manipulation, political manipulation. That is clear. And we grew with that, with that idea. And when we opened the first door, I opened the first door in 1964. That was Western House. Western House was the first door bringing the story American, but my story America, I have no idea about what was really, I never traveled in America at the time.
Where did you do this?
In Paris, in Abbé de la Grande Armée, close to the Arc de Triomphe.
D'accord.
Yeah.
In 1964,
yeah.
Paris, 4 years before the whole student moment that we all think of as being that big rebellious moment. But what, paint me a quick picture of Paris, your Paris in 1964.
I came to like 65,000 people watched the TV and watched a guy named Johnny Hallyday. Everybody won't become like Johnny Hallyday.
Well, I don't
we
know
want
who
to
that
do a
is.
Rock and roll.
Oh, he's a rocker.
It was the beginning of the rock and twist, not the rock and roll.
Like
rock
twist and twist. Shouty stuff.
Yeah. And that was something like we make a group, and we want to be Elvis Presley or something like this.
Did you have a roll neck sweater?
Eh?
Did you have like a beatnik polo neck sweater?
Oh no! At the time, no, I was a cowboy. I already wear cowboy stuff. And at the time to find cowboy stuff, it was not easy.
So you decided to bring it to the city?
To the city. And I was part of just all these people coming to Paris. And I immediately understood it was not my talent, my skill to play music. But I start to say, okay, from that, you change your clothes, you do this and this and this. All my friends become idols from zero. They have something like the beginning of the magazine for youth magazine. It's the first time it was youth magazine, Salut les copains, Mademoiselle Achetendre, etc., etc.
Diana Vreeland saying youth quake.
Yeah, and what I capture surely that and somewhere. Of course, nobody traveled in America at the time, even singing, it was what, blah, blue, blah, blah. It was showing up. Nobody talked really seriously about the real world because we don't understand.
You were kids?
And that was the beginning of, I never designed, but for me, it was something like bringing all this dream, American dream somewhere in Europe. We were the first door.
What did you sell?
Cowboy boots that from El Paso, Texas, all the Dan Post, Justin, Lucchese, all these kind of cowboy boots. And that was really the beginning of the huge. And Paris now is still in America from a cowboy boots. The friends still the one of the large customer in America. That's crazy.
Okay, so denim. What was denim like then?
But when you have a cowboy boots, when you have a guitar on you have a guitar and something, what you're missing? You're missing a jean. And what we watch on the movie, on this kind of Serie B.
James Dean.
Yeah, James Dean was part of that. For me, it was more John Wayne, Rock Hudson. The dream was American dream. He was a cowboy something. And I met Marité.
I want to know that, but just to set the scene for listeners. Obviously, you're best known for François Marité
Gibault.
Yeah. I had to pause to say it beautifully.
No, but that is also something strange. Because Marité, she's Marité Bachelory, and I'm François Gibault. But at the time, it was not possible to put two names. Because at the time, it was Pierre Cardin, all this kind of name. And it was never a couple. A man and a woman, it was not possible. We have to wait when it was Dolce Gabbana, but it was 20 years after. Just at the beginning, the fact of Marité was a girl, and putting the name together, it was not possible.
So when did you?
Okay, at the beginning, we took, because the people knows me from the store, from Western House, and she Marité is Maria Teresa, something like a Marité, and she was new also in the scene of for Paris scene.
So what was your vision at the beginning for denim?
No, it was not nothing to do with that. At the time, it was, okay, there was the folklore. You know, we were also hippie at the time, okay, long hair, et cetera, et cetera. And that we what we did. We want to make the garment, the French worker jacket, something like this. But for us, it was, okay, corduroy, moleskine, etc., and also denim, because denim was part of our culture. But we never realized doing this. We did a really good step, because we make the first outfit. It was something with 50 buttons. 50 buttons, and also a little bit inspiration, like a Mexican, you know, this kind of stuff. And that was the first success we make. The folklore at the time was going to Afghanistan on the route of Kathmandu.
Oh, yeah.
It was more
okay.
Indian stuff. And somewhere we say, oh, why? We don't want to look like that. We want to look like a French worker. And that was really the
you didn't want your Afghan coat in
no,
your
No, yeah, of course, yeah. Of course. But of
Are
course, all this kind
of course. Of course you did.
We did everything. And okay, and when I met Marité in Saint-Tropez, and we start to. She was knitting something for a friend. She make a poncho, but a really strange poncho with. And that was really the beginning, because I bring that to the store. Immediately, I sold that to Elsa Martinelli, Brigitte Bardot, Catherine Auge. It was a product placement. It was but we didn't know about it. It was a product placement.
Did she have to knit all the stock?
Yeah.
All on her own?
After.
How many did she make?
After we hired some woman on the concierge. You know, concierge from me. We have something like 50 or 60, okay. 60 people doing that, because that was a success, immediate success.
Brigitte Bardot?
Yeah, well, of course, yes, because, you know, opening a store in the 60s with all this kind of American dream, it was, we have everybody coming.
Of course you do.
It could be also the people coming for make the advertising for the new film or something, and some people like Yul Brynner or something. I knew everybody like this.
I want to talk about the environment, but not until I've asked you if Mick Jagger ever came.
But no, we are the same age. That's for me. For me, the Rolling Stone, they came also to Western House, and I sold something like, I don't know, it was the first turquoise from Keith Richard. I think I sold him at the beginning, because these people come. It was a British guy. They have no clue about what's happening in America also at the time. They don't travel to America.
No.
60, no.
No, they just got it from music. They just bought the records, of course. I mean, look at all that stuff about, you know, the Beatles. They just basically taught themselves from records and then went and approximated it. I mean,
But I'm kind of Beatles somewhere, okay? Because, no, but it's the same. We came, we were on the scene, we were part of the system. The system is... We have the same dream. I have the same dream of John Lennon. We have the same, because that at the beginning was that.
Okay.
After, we realized before 68, because you talk about revolution in 68. No, we make the revolution before, because also we realized American, what they are, they killed this poor Indian, but it was something like, it was worst of what's happening.
Why are you looking up to a culture
they kill it, and because... For us, it was pom 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 killing in the movie. Killing more Indians was great, but one day we realized it was no, it was absolutely completely horrible.
Wow!
And that was the beginning of Wounded Knee, and that was really the first we became Indians. We became really Indian, or we were all everything with a feather, etc. That with a fringe at the time.
But now we would say that was cultural appropriation, and we couldn't put a lens on it that would make sense of it. But when you speak about that, you were in solidarity with that.
I'm talking about Black Elk. I'm talking about this. All this philosophy. We start to share the same hair, the same place, the same hearth. You want the story? I'll tell you a story.
Talking about cool and about pioneering and innovating and doing the rebellious thing, I'm going to throw this quote at you. This is from much later. You said in an interview, we tried everything and we found that stones and water worked.
Yeah.
What could be more natural?
It's cool.
Little did we know that we had innocently started an inexorable process of destruction. We invented an industrialized stonewash, which no one else had ever done.
Is a fact.
But with it, We also created a trade and an industry that polluted every river on the planet.
Yeah, that was completely, we realized but late, too late. Because at the beginning, using water and stone just to make the AIDS gene, that was natural. We don't invent anything because it was, well, everybody, we were selling American clothing and the trouser for Madame de Rothschild or something like this, and somewhere, Edmond could wear that. Okay. No, bleach, wash the jean, put some sand, etc., etc. Explain to these people it was not possible. And Marité start to wash just because to make this, the hard piece of fabric become so soft and change the color. It was something like a mystery for the people. And that was that the beginning of we wash the jean. We don't wash the jean to make something. We wash the jean because to make more soft and the color more light. And for that, one day after that, we start with different stuff, with sand, with different. And one day, putting that in the tumbler, I said, shit, it was a noise, it was completely, it was impossible.
So you'd started making denim when?
From the beginning, from 65, 66.
Then you start to make
When we make the garment looking like a French uniform or something like a worker. Mm. But in the same time, it was also denim because it was our culture somewhere.
So at what point, then obviously you want to make it look lived in and aged and fantastic and cool. Mm. When did you start this process of stonewashing?
It was an evolution. It was an evolution.
The
okay.
Early, like 70s?
The 70s. Yeah. No, 60s. 60, right. 60s. Between 64, 5, 6, 7, I don't know. I don't remember exactly. It was all this kind of at the time. Okay, but an example. I remember something. It's something, okay, perhaps it's after. The first time I visit Greensboro, but I'm talking 20 years after, okay? And the guy of Greensboro on the Con Mills is the large mills from denim in North Carolina. And the people say, Francois, we are so happy to have you because Calvin Klein, Donna, Ralph, nobody came. You were the first designer coming to our mills. And I say, okay. I say, I was surprised. And they say, but I remember your first order of fabric. The guy was saying, why you remember my first order? Yeah, yeah. The guy said to me, oh, yeah, it was a year of the flood. And I said, what you talk? And I remember at the time, 66 or something, the American came to Western House. And the American guy was saying, oh, my God, what you are doing with the fabric? You are doing skirt, you are doing dress, you are doing... Okay, and in America, we are doing just commodity clothing or something like this. It was, oh, my...
So it was strictly workwear.
Yeah. And we make some so different stuff. And the guy said, okay, but what you need, because he realized something, it was interesting on it. And I say, okay, I want something, okay, one stripe, wash, one stripe, dark stripe, wash, etc., etc. And that was something. And we receive, I don't know, after perhaps 2 weeks after, we receive a roll of fabric. And when my God, it was okay. Americans are so great because, you know, I'm asking that. I try many times in the factory, French factory. Nobody understand. Well, the Americans are great. And that was a piece of fabric. And we cut the first jean on that. And the jean was made. And at the time, Marité and the friend around us, it was a guy named Jimi Hendrix. But the Jimi Hendrix, we don't know it was Jimi Hendrix at the time. He was just playing with Johnny Hallyday or something like this, before Hey Joe or something. And he was the boyfriend of Françoise. And he wore this trouser. He wears this trouser, and this trouser, he bring this trouser to, what's the name, the big stuff, Woodstock.
I was stuck.
And everybody won this kind of jean somewhere. And we were successful. It was a pinto jean. Everybody called it because it looked like a pinto horse. And that was a success.
Because it looks like a what?
Pinto. Like a Mustang pinto. Okay, come on, horse. Okay? The color of that. And that was something this kind. But imagine that, okay? And the what I'm talking
okay,
about.
Let
me finish because it's really interesting. And that, okay, but it was successful because of the people like Mail, Land Rover, different brand. Okay, make this the same jeans with this kind of stripe or something. And it was a big success. That was surely the first success we had, but nobody knew about that. Okay. 20 years after, when I came to this place, to Greensboro, and the guy remembered, oh, François, I remembered you were for, and he said the float. Because when he received this order, he said, oh my God, these French people, what they want. But they have an inventory of tons of denim, at the time was completely destroyed by the water, by the float, and it was all washed by inundation. That was the result of that.
No.
It was a mistake.
It was a natural disaster.
Yeah, it's a natural disaster. That makes this fabric, the Pinto fabric, is something like this.
And bloody hell, yeah. Then you made a natural disaster out of your next fabric without even knowing that was on the trajectory you were.
Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness.
Absolutely. And it's so like this. It's so many. I could tell you a lot of story about that.
Okay, Francois, why is stonewashing a bad idea? Like, it looked so cool. It was
To abrasion, using the stone, the abrasion, it was not a bad idea. I'm sorry, it's not a bad idea. It was good.
But what are the impacts of the process?
No, it was after to acceleration about the aging process, we start to use, okay, chlorine, and after, blah, 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 acid and permanganate, et cetera, et cetera. That was really bad. But it's not just me, okay? At the time, the jean business in Europe grew around 73.
Yeah.
It was everybody wore jean before. Nobody wore jean. Even the look about the 68, it's nobody in the street in Paris wearing jean. We were three people only, huh? Looking like a cowboy. Come on.
Amazing. I want to get back to the stonewash thing, though. So by the 80s, when stonewash was endemic, you know, it was like, okay, everything was stonewashed in the 80s. Mm-hmm. I think of brands like Guess. Mm-hmm. But at this point, the process was using harsh chemicals, bleachers, permanganate.
Yeah, but that was part of the evolution. We 75, 76. We invent wash in continuation. We invent wash in continuation. And for me, I think at the time, if I have a possibility to use the atomic bomb, I use the atomic bomb to destroy the gene. Like somewhere, Catherine was working in the same place in Italy. And Vivienne also, Vivienne Westwood. Catherine Hamnett and Vivienne Westwood. We were in the same place. We were the idea, did these people come with a punk idea or something like this? It was destroyed, no future. In the same time, the Japanese with Rekawa Kubo, something like more pauperism, all this kind of poor stuff, something. That was also the direction. Everybody look at that direction. Looking at it was the destruction or torn gene or something like this. That was, okay, we want to destroy because it was part also against the bourgeois, against something. It was for the reason. It was not just to... Not come like today when I see my granddaughter or something or wearing a jean destroyed knee cleavage.
The knees cut
it's
out.
Ridiculous.
And also they buy them.
Yeah, okay, but that is so ridiculous. For what? That is no part of the story. Here we are talking about this kind of, we destroy the jean for a reason, somewhere, for a reason, without reason. And that was part of the awakening for me. It was the awakening for me because I realized something was wrong. And when I saw Berlin Wall, 1989, Berlin Wall fell. And I saw these people coming from the east side, the communist people, wearing this kind of snow wash, acid wash. I said, oh my God, that is my responsibility somewhere, because it was also part of the American dream. We create the American, worldwide, the dream about gene, use gene. But using gene like this, it was a mistake. And that was really the first time when I stopped to do that.
When did the impacts on the environment and on water become clear to you?
For me, 1989. 1989 was...
But was there a process where you had to go digging into it and to try to get reports or to see exactly what happened to rivers, for example, or groundwater when these chemicals were dispatched into it? Like, how did you know?
No. For me, I didn't know anything. I'm just a stupid guy. I just say, is something wrong?
You had a feeling.
And I turned, And I watched only polyamide. At the time, I was just from cotton indigo, and I turned completely. And that was also the beginning of the stretch. At the time, it was 90, 80 something, and I worked with sport fabric, become something from bringing that to everyday life. And that was also a success. It was a huge success.
You have a magic touch, yeah. That's why. Can we talk about sandblasting?
Sandblasting, I think it's the best stuff in the world. The sandblasting is beautiful. It's completely, you could really, because when stonewashing is just by case, it's random somewhere. Sandblasting, you could go into the detail, et cetera, et cetera. But today is finished. We cannot do that anymore because we know that it's a silicose. Silicose, you die. You die with silicose. It's not possible.
But for a long time, the industry didn't want to embrace that knowledge or didn't want to accept it. In 2009...
I never did sandblasting personally. Personally, no. Acid wash and sandblasting, I never did because I was against that. I tried to be natural from the beginning, water, stone. But I start to work with polymer, etc., etc. And I took 10 years for me to understand... Okay, my God, I'm doing something, but in the same time, it's not biodegradable. One thing with the denim, with the cotton, I destroy everything, but with the polyester, I'm making a lot of waste, something like this. And that was the beginning also when I start to plant on the wall. We create some wall and polyester, and we make the plant growing. That was something, okay, we could replace what we're missing by the deforestation, all the forest, but we could create on every city in the world using the verticality of the wall, creating natural. That was the first stop. We opened store in Paris, in New York, and in Osaka or something, with all this kind of
vertical.
Nobody understood at the time. Nobody understood because it was also difficult to understand, surely. But the plant could grow on polyester. That is still interesting.
Yeah, and I don't really understand it myself.
Okay, but that, now you see some evolution in the architect, some people using the verticality, and that is okay possible to recreate the city completely full of green.
But
that
why is the polyester component essential to that growing?
I don't know, because it's surely the guy is Patrick Blanc, he's an ethnologue or something like this. He did the first. It's exactly what's happening in the Amazonian forest, because you the coverage of, you don't ever see completely the sun in America, and on this kind of stone, on the stone or something, the plant grows.
Okay.
Yeah.
Amazing.
No, it's true. It's a fact.
In your long career of innovation, you then try to solve some of this stuff. So let's talk about lasers. So,
but that the laser was because I was working in polyester and polyamide, polypropylene, etc., etc. For me, it was why we have to make the sewing like we are not cowboy anymore. We don't need to have like a saddle or something like this. I want to have I want to fuse. I want to. I don't want any kind of seam. Why? That was the beginning. Completely by the polyester, we could really create something like melting fusion. And that was really where we start. And what is the best stuff to cut? Oh, it's a laser. It was just the first beginning of the laser, and we work on the laser. And that is the reason I manipulate the laser beam from the beginning. And we introduced in 2003 or something like this, what we call Imagine. Imagine, it was just the possibility to bring image on the gene by laser. Mm. That was the first. Imagine, after Imagine, it was Wattwash.
Yeah, so Wattwash was 2013?
The Wattwash, I don't... 2006 or so, something like this. No, okay. I remember. I remember exactly.
But the idea of Wattwash is that you get that distressed look, but with 70% less water or something?
No. At the beginning, it was not that. It was, I don't care about water. At the time, we don't, you know, it's something, you don't wake up one morning and say, okay, I want to save the planet. It's not exactly like that. It's not true. For me, it was something like, with laser, I realized, okay, weaving, when you weave something, you have two yarns and crossing with two and two and one and three and one, etc. Yeah. How many? After 50 years of in this work, I don't know. I know perhaps 9, 10 way to create the weaving. And Okay, that's what all the textile industry work like that.
So you're just looking for the innovation.
And laser. Yeah. When you have a canvas or something like this, you can make a diagonal on that, and you engraving. And that is new.
Okay.
And now let me see, because it's so important for the young people. They have the possibility to reinvent the textile. And that was the beginning of the water wash for me. It was so it's okay. They could create a new kind of fabric, because you can mix something straight, something vertical, something horizontal, and something like that, to create new, because Aunthus, Prince of Wales, etc. After, it's always the same. It's always the same. And now it's possible to do that with one fabric, with order. You have one fabric, and you want Aunthus, you want some Presse de Galles or something like that. Okay, you make we could do that with laser.
Okay, but I'm very interested in how we can try to solve the problems that our planet is reeling from as a result of this industry. And you say you don't wake up one morning and think, I want to save the planet. However, you are a campaigner in terms of, not a professional campaigner, but you speak very strongly about the fact that this industry needs to reform.
That was rebel, not criminal. Rebel, not criminal, it was something like that. Okay, we have to also take the responsibility. With what we did at the time in Martelli, in some kind in Italy, we share with Renzo Rosso, with Claudio Bucciol from Replay, with Adriano, something. That, we create something, but we create a monster. We create a monster, because all this treatment we invent at the time, nobody controlled. Nobody was really aware about how to regulate that. It's no one government have no enough balls to take the responsibility to say, okay, that is prohibited. Only the sandblasting in Turkey. And in Turkey is the reason I work also in Turkey, because I think some people, they are not responsible, because the big brands go to the place. And we criticize about Bangladesh, Pakistan, etc. But who is giving order? The big brand, the big company, American company, etc. We have to say the truth. We have to say the truth, because these people are not responsible. For what? The other day in Istanbul, I was so pissed off, because I have all the manufacturer, all the Turkish manufacturer.
At a conference.
But you know, for me, it was like wow, with Turkish something on back to me, something writing from Turkish manufacturer or something. I felt like a Midnight Express, you know, something like I was all these people. And I said, you responsible, you have to take that. Anyway, it's impossible. And I accuse, and I was like them, like I accuse Balmain, I accuse what's name, okay, French girl, because they put on the runway the poor Gaia. Isabelle Marant. Gaia Gerber, the daughter of Cindy Crawford.
New daughter.
Okay, but you think...
So hang on, let's just recap that for listeners who aren't aware.
Okay.
So you were talking about Gaia Gerber modeling stonewash in... I don't know if it was...
In on the runway of Isabelle Marant. Isabelle Marant runway. And for me, it was something like, okay, I have to call something, because he put this girl on the market, but if nobody, she's too young to understand.
But to you, just for you, when you see that stonewash on the runway, you think, we know it's so harmful. We have no excuse to be promoting it. Right?
I'm accusing also Vogue magazine. I'm sorry, I'm accusing when they did with Katy Perry. Okay, they want to relaunch the acid wash in America. What the hell the journalists are not doing in... journalists also have to denounce that.
Well, I'm doing it now.
No, we are doing that. No, I appreciate. We have, yeah. But it's part of the role we have. And you're right. Somebody have to talk also, because nobody talk. I'm talking. You say, François, you say, oh yeah, I say the truth. I say what I say my feeling. And I know, because I have some responsibility. I had some responsibility, but it's not just me. It's a trade. And somewhere today we could correct. We could also avoid something. But in the same time, we will make other mistakes. But today, with ozone, we separate hydrogen and oxygen, and we are doing ozone. Ozone
treating of denim.
Yeah, treat by the ozone treat. And the result of ozone in indigo fabric, by the fact of the shading of that, becomes bleach. We don't need any kind of chemical.
François,
Natural is natural also. It's the same water, energy, or something. We talk about that.
I know your mind is not on this now, but I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, yeah. Where does it come from in you? You are so curious, but you're also so
I'm a rock and roll. I'm a rock and roll. I'm a cowboy.
That's the best answer. I reckon that's the end.
Yeah, no, rebel. It's a rebellion. I'm a kind of Waylon Jennings or something. I don't know. Willie Nelson now, more I get older. But I want to talk about something. I'm not completely, when you talk about sustainability is to share, okay? Do we share everything? I'm not sure about this stuff. I'm not sure about this organic cotton. I don't think, personally, I never saw really a field of cotton organic. I never saw on the planet Earth, okay, for the moment. If we want, the most dangerous material for the Earth is the cotton. If we want to be sustainable, forget the cotton. Take off the cotton of the planet. That's good. Put the cotton in the planet Mars. It could be good. But in reality, it's not true. I'm really following all these kind of young people. They believe of that. They believe of something. Yeah, okay.
Well, good. You're an old hippie at heart, so you must also believe it too. You told me you were an old hippie when you were in the 60s. I mean, that need to protect. I mean, you're here saying that you don't wake up one day and say you want to save the planet.
Good point. But yeah, I think we have to continue to believe of what they are doing, but we know it's not perfect. It's not perfect, and we are in some progress. But the progress, when you talk about, and you already have some, okay, 1% of material is completely recyclable. I'm sorry, it's so sad. And have to be presented by Stella McCartney and by Mr. Nike or something like this. I don't care. Because we need to make big effort to change that. That the people, but they have to teach also. We have to educate the people because they don't know. It's too easy to cry. But the most important is completely when you have something cost nothing. Okay, when you see a garment 19%, a dress $90 or 19 euro, and it's not possible. Of course, we are taking the blood of somebody. And that is something we cannot. We have to stop.
Now it's getting hard. My parents feel that this is a waste of time. I don't get away because everything is just fine. My friends will feel that I'm defending you. I tell them all that they are wrong because I love you.
Thank you for listening to Wardrobe Crisis. To learn more about our guests and the issues that we've spoken about today, hop on over to my website, which is clairepress.com/podcast. You can get in touch there, and I really hope you will. I'd love to hear from you. And you can also find links to my social media. And finally, if you're enjoying the show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe. You know what they say, first in, best dressed. Subscribers are first to find out when there's a new episode, and it also helps other people discover Wardrobe Crisis, so I'd love your help with that. Because the more people who switch on to ethical fashion, the better. Music is by Montaigne. She recorded this special acoustic version of Because I Love You, which is from her Glorious Heights album, especially for Wardrobe Crisis. How good is that? Thank you, Montaigne.
Because I love you. My parents feel that this is a waste of time. I tell you we're okay. I won't admit that I am blind. My friends don't feel that I'm carrying us too. I tell them all that they are wrong. Because I love you. Because I love you. Because I love you, because I love you, because I love you.